value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders. And if you haven't noticed recently, one thing that's getting a lot of attention, not necessarily in the U.S. presidential elections, but most certainly around the world, is ESG investing, taking a look at the environmental, sustainable, and governance impact of how companies do their businesses and how one might invest profitably in that process. Joining me now to talk about that is Andy Howard. He is Global Head of Sustainable Investments at Schroders. Andy, thanks for being with us today. And this topic has really exploded on the scene, led largely not by those who are necessarily pushing product, but by investors who are demanding more and more of the companies in which they invest. What do you think was the trigger point for this renewed interest in sustainability?
Well, okay, and it's great to join you, Ron. Thanks very much. I think there's a number of things that are all coming together, but in many ways, the COVID crisis that we're going through and have been going through for the last 6 months or so, I think in many ways has been oddly enough the trigger in itself. When we've seen past crises, if we go back to sort of 2008, 2009, what was very clear, if you look at the political discourse, if you look at the level of focus on sustainability or climate change or ESG related topics, fell off very sharply. It moved into a hunker down and batten down the hatches mode. And to a certain degree, that's happened this time around. But it's also very telling that we continue to see people at large and regulators and politicians remain very focused on the sustainability challenges that we've been talking about for a number of years, whether that's climate change, whether that's inequality, whether that's around healthcare, whether that's around labor rights. These are right at the front of the political agenda. And I do think that it's interesting that going through this crisis, we've really seen in many ways the catalyst for more renewed, more rigorous, more focus on how do we tackle some of the issues which have been right at the cause, not necessarily the cause of the crisis, but certainly have helped exacerbate the impact of the crisis this time around. I do think that's a very different situation to what we've seen in past crises. And it's one that I think sets a platform for how we might come out of this with actually a much more renewed focus on sustainability at large and specific topics in particular.
Yeah, and we've seen some policy change, and we've seen some commitments from some countries and some states in the U.S., for that matter, to drive emissions down to zero, whether it's China in 2050 or 2060. The U.K. has suggested, like California now, that it wants to ensure that there will be no internal combustion engines on the road by 2030 or 2040. How much are these policy changes now driving behavior?
Well, you raised a number of really interesting points there, I think, Ron. And if you look at this over the last few years, we've been talking about the 2020s, not just we, but a lot of people have been talking about the 2020s as being the decade in which we would need to see real concerted action to drive down carbon emissions, to decarbonize economies around the world. Now, if you go back over the last 30, 40 years, there have been two or three years in which carbon emissions globally have fallen year over year. And it's only ever been for 1 year at a time. And we need to get into a situation where if we're going to meet the commitments that were made in Paris back in 2015, we need a concerted and sustained effort to cut emissions. And the 2020s were really the last decade in which that change could happen. And if I'm being totally honest, going back a few years, it was still fairly unclear whether the commitment was there to make that transition. And you mentioned China with its 2060 net zero target. You look also at what the EU has done. It's got a 2050 net zero target. It's talking about looking for a 55% cut in emissions by 2030. It's also earmarked some three quarters of the COVID recovery plan to have to be aligned to the region's green goals. And clearly the situation in the US, whilst uncertain, there's actually an awful lot of reason to think that we may see more action there. Again, depending on how things play out later on this year. But there is, if you look at it, you add it all together globally, you've got, roughly speaking, a third of the world's economy has now made some level of commitment towards net zero carbon emissions. We are now in a situation where over a quarter of the world's carbon emissions have some sort of price attached to them. And there's an awful lot more work to be done, but the movements are coming together, the pieces are coming together to really say this may well actually turn out to be the catalyst that drives a more sustained reduction in emissions for the next few years and decades. So actually, I do think we're at a very interesting time in the carbon and climate story at the moment in terms of real commitments and real focus to driving change.
So, Andy, with respect to assessing climate change and its impact on investments, what kind of tools are you deploying to effectively analyze the situation in which we find ourselves?
One of the challenges here is that you can't go back to the last time this happened and say, how did this play out and how do we therefore use the same playbook for climate change this time around? This is all about building up a bottom-up knowledge of how industries work, how companies make money, and how all of those things will change in a world that is decarbonizing rapidly. We've really focused on four main areas of risk. First of all, around carbon pricing. So we're already in a position where a quarter of the world's emissions have a price attached. As that price gets higher, we can model the impact on companies' cash flows and earnings. Secondly, the effects of physical risk to companies' assets. So as weather patterns become more volatile, what risks does that pose to companies' physical assets? Thirdly, around the impact of being of oil and gas companies and coal companies being unable to develop the fossil fuel assets that they hold in the ground. What impact does that have on the value of those businesses? And then finally, around the effects of reallocating capital and what that means for some industries growing faster, some industries shrinking more quickly, and the value that's created as that capital gets reallocated within the real economy from dirtier to cleaner industries and activities.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So how much is the private sector and individual companies, how much have they really figured out that this is where the world has to go no matter what?
Well, I think you're right. A lot of companies have figured that out, and you've got more and more companies similarly making commitments to decarbonize their business, at least at some level. And I think it's partly, as you say, it's around they can see in many parts of the world the direction of travel. They can see, I mean, I'll refer to the stat of a third of the world's economy now, or the world's GDP, comes from parts of the world that have committed to ultimately reaching net zero emissions. And so that you can see the direction of travel is relatively clear. The other thing that I would also throw in, though, and I think this is an absolutely critical element to this, is that the economics of making that choice have got an awful lot easier. So in many parts of the world, the costs of producing power from clean energy are lower than the costs of producing it from fossil fuels. We aren't there yet, but we are not too far away from a point where the cost of electric vehicles on a life cycle basis converge with the cost of owning internal combustion engine vehicles. So in a lot of areas, things that were otherwise costly choices to make are now becoming zero cost, or in some cases, saving choices to make. And I think that's been the other real change. This is no longer really an economic trade-off in the same way that it was in the past.
Now, have investors shifted their focus when it comes to sustainable investing?
Short answer, no, not really. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the crisis over the last 6 months or so, and you look at the degree to which sustainable funds in all of their different flavors remain very much in focus. We continue to see inflows through most of the year to date. During an environment which funds were seeing outflows. Similarly, one of the things that we published recently, and we run this every year, is a global investor survey, which asks just over 23,000 people around the world in 32 countries what their views of a whole range of different areas of investment are at this point in time. And one of the things that we saw, just to pull out a headline stat at a global level, is that 47% of those people, so roughly half, said that they invest in sustainable funds. And that's up by 5% from 2 years ago. Climate and environmental issues are clearly right toward the top of that agenda, whether you look globally or you look at the US, they're very close to the top of that list of priorities. So you do have this picture where, if anything, I think most investors have realized that actually sustainability is not a luxury choice. It's not a thing that you add on afterwards. This is about trying to align the way that investors deploy capital and the way that we as asset managers deploy capital with the way the world is changing.
Let me ask you to look into your crystal ball, however poor the air quality might be at the moment, given everything that we've seen this year. 2021 is going to be in many ways a seminal year. I mean, obviously, within a matter of weeks, we have a presidential election in the United States. We have the potential for another COVID lockdown in Europe, the UK more specifically. There are a whole host of issues, as always, but maybe in this year a little bit more pronounced than we've seen in the past. What do you see happening in 2021 in this regard?
Well, I think there's a couple of areas. I mean, you said there's a whole range of uncertainties that could flip things in any direction, but there's a couple of areas that really stand out to us as really being likely to be on the agenda next year. The first one, weirdly enough, is already on the agenda for this year. So that's sort of, you mentioned it before, but the sort of second order implications of the COVID crisis. First of all, as we start to roll off public support schemes. Secondly, as the sort of the pent up tensions around mental health and people being stuck at home start to build. And you begin to see some of those second order effects as the crisis drags on, which it looks inevitable that it will drag on for some time, seems to be an unavoidable challenge for next year. And one that I think perhaps the market will have to start paying more and more attention to. What are those, not just the sort of the immediate impacts, but what are those more long lasting impacts on areas like mental health, which really point to how are these companies conducting themselves? How are these companies engaging with those issues and engaging with their workforce? And the other area is climate change. So look, the Paris Accord was signed back in 2015. That laid out a set of commitments, but there was always then a five-year window in which countries around the world were to go away and to develop concrete plans to go alongside those commitments. And the fact that the follow-up conference this year was delayed as a result of COVID to some degree took some of the sort of the pressure out of the system. But you know, the announcement that you saw from China, I think, will be followed by a whole range of additional announcements, or is likely to be, that really accelerate that awareness that the next conference of the parties, which is that sort of annual conference where you bring together the commitments from around the world, actually could well really crystallize the point that we were talking about earlier in terms of the importance and the commitment that we're seeing from governments to really meeting those climate goals that they all signed up to in Paris primarily.
I want to ask you a final question, because there's a it's not a new word, but it's creeping into the climate change lexicon even as we speak, biodiversity. What does that mean relative to how we've discussed climate change in the past?
Well, you're absolutely right. This is the discussion is shifting a little. But the way I would look at this is that biodiversity broadly, or let's put it slightly differently, climate change in many ways is a symptom of a bigger problem. And that bigger problem manifests in the biodiversity in all of its guises. Climate change fundamentally comes down to the inherent tensions between a bigger, wealthier, more consumption-heavy world population and the limits of the world's resources to continue absorbing that. And so whether you look at this in terms of measures like the Global Footprint Network, who every year announce how many planets the world is consuming relative to the number of planets that the world can support. And we've been in deficit now for several decades, and that deficit's only getting wider. Or whether you think about this in terms of the whole range of other, whether it be water, whether it be waste, whether it be mineral resources, they all point to the same picture. Climate change is the area of focus and has been the area of focus, but those same challenges exist across the board in all areas of natural resources and the natural habitat and, broadly speaking, biodiversity. So that question in terms of how do we think about climate change and how does that sort of that view of the world expand to other areas is absolutely valid. And we'll be having the same discussions around water, around energy use, around minerals going forward, I'm absolutely certain.
All right, Andy, it was a pleasure to talk to you today. Thanks for being with us.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to read more about any of the subjects we've spoken about in these shows, go to schroders.com/insights. You can listen to a whole back catalogue at schroders.com/theinvestor download. If you want to get in touch with us, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Feel free to pose any questions. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.